Psalm 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of this year's Jazz Foundation Showcase.
I'll take a look at Encore's New Direction and their season opener.
And I'll learn more about who's performing at this year's City Ballet's Evening with the Stars Gala. Plus, there will be that arts calendar we call...
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Each year, the Indianapolis Jazz Foundation puts on a showcase performance. This year, it'll be celebrating 20 years with a concert featuring Everett Green and the Joel Tucker Trio, announcing scholarships, and inducting four new members to the Indianapolis Jazz Hall of Fame. Travis DiNicola spoke with jazz drummer Gene Markovich about the concert.
Gene, welcome to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And glad you've come in and talk about the Jazz Foundation Showcase. 20 years. That's pretty awesome.
20 years for the Jazz Foundation. Ironically, I was one of the first board members by accident.
But
it was a group of us trying to figure out. There was a lot of people doing different things supporting jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And we just said, hey, we need to get together. And
yeah.
And that's kind of the short version. Actually, one of the people that really...
Was it mainly musicians? I mean,
it was, and it was mainly the guy who was a dear... It was a mentor to me. One of the guys that really was responsible but never on the board was Chuck Carter, saxophonist Chuck Carter, who was my partner in our quartet. But it was Steve Ali and David Ali and Gary Walters.
Sure.
And I'm probably forgetting some people, but... then it grew into more professional, and it does need to be professional. The thing about my vision, I'll just start with my own questions if you don't mind.
Yeah,
no, I'm just
right.
No, the vision of the Jazz Foundation is it shouldn't just be musician; it has to be jazz fans
and
professionals. You know, it needs to be for it to work properly. That's always been my opinion. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got to have the fans.
You do. We ain't nothing without our fans, and we love them. So.
And also, and you know, remember people who own clubs and presenters.
Absolutely.
And all that. So you're on the board now. What do you have a title? For
I
that?
Am
or drummer extraordinaire.
Drummer extraordinaire. Yeah. Handsome. No, I am actually I am the president of Jazz Foundation. So
awesome.
I am the president, and I did. I am very educationally minded, and I was the education chairperson for a while, but now I'm the president.
Okay. Now, I've been to a number of these showcases over the years. They're often, I mean, it's always sort of right around the holidays. Sometimes it seems like it's more of a holiday show, sometimes a little bit less. I remember some years it used to be at the Vogue. It's been at a number of different locations. This year it's at a location that I'm not familiar with. It's called the Jewel Center up on Illinois Street. Tell me a bit about that.
The Jewel Center is a new venue owned by Cynthia Bates, who is one of our board members.
Okay.
And I think, you know, she's trying to get a business up there to revitalize that area. It's a beautiful place, and there's plenty of parking, and it's a good room for what we're doing.
Cool.
And that is nothing against any of the past places. We're just trying to change it up a little bit. That Cynthia does an excellent job, has a lot of, is trying to get more music functions in there, and it seemed like a good year to have it there. It's we'll give you the address here in a minute, but it's at 333 North Illinois.
Right.
And she's been doing a lot of things there, so that's why we decided to move it there, just change it up a little bit. And it is our 20th year. The history of this showcase, like you said, originally it was at the Vogue, and it was kind of it started off as like kind of an all-star thing. And it was actually an idea I was reminded of by our dear friend Kathy Morris, who said in Kathy's, kind of perky, I say that with love, perky way. She said, we need to have a party. And it was like, so the first year they did that. And then it kind of matured and ebbed and flowed without going through the whole history. Mm-hmm. And I actually kind of pushed to rename it as the Legacy Showcase.
Okay.
because what it has become is kind of to honor the young and the old of jazz.
Yeah.
Although I'm in the Hall of Fame, I guess I'm old. But, you know, just to honor our legacy, and that's why we call it the Legacy Showcase. And this being our 20th year, I thought it'd be a good time to do that.
I think there's two really important elements in the event. One is giving out the scholarships, which
yes.
in a sense is, you know, honoring the young. And the other is the inducting people into the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame has been in existence, what, about 10 years now, roughly? Or
I believe
like
so.
That?
I okay. believe. Well, no, it's actually...
Has it been since the beginning?
It's been since the Hall of Fame started with that first Vogue show.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it went back that far.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about... So who's in the Hall of Fame this year?
The inductees are a really interesting group. Two of the people I will name have passed away,
mm-hmm.
but I'm glad we get a chance. Drummer Ron Brinson, and Ron is one of these guys that was around the jazz scene, and sadly we lost him a few years ago to lung cancer. But Ron, believe me, Ron was a healthy guy as mm-hmm. far as the unfortunate thing he had. He was this great guy, always... smiled. He played with everybody from Claude Sifferlin,
sure,
and Steve Ali. I mean, he was like the first call in bebop. But I remember in the 70s, Ron was with Hugo Smooth. I don't know if you remember the group. It was kind of a fusion-y group around the time of Return to Forever, and very talented. So Ron Brinson, and then Larry Wiseman, trumpeter Larry Wiseman, who... boy, the more you hear about Larry, the more you hear about Larry. Larry was just the trumpet player in town. No ego. He was just the lead trumpet player in town.
Excellent.
Did studio work. Any band I played in him with, he was the spirit of that band.
Yeah.
And not ego, just a great soul. His wife and son are actually flying in from New York to
nice.
Be a part of the evening. And one tidbit I didn't know until this process where I got to call them and tell them
yeah.
is Larry was in the documentary with Muhammad Ali when he took the Motown group to Africa. There's shots of Larry because he went on the road with that band and played. So
oh, cool.
I think that's cool.
Yeah.
The other two folks... are Edith Fitzhugh,
mm-hmm.
who is not a musician, but she has done so much for jazz in this city. She is one of those fans that since I got into the jazz scene, she was always promoting jazz. She had flyers, newsletters before the internet. She was
mm-hmm.
promoting and not in it for anything but to promote jazz.
Just because she loved it. I think that's really cool that you include people like that in the Hall of Fame.
If we don't have those people, we don't have jazz.
Yeah.
I mean, we just don't. She knows jazz. And everybody would recognize Edith if you go to jazz events because
mm-hmm.
she's there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Steve Korn is our fourth inductee this year. We're inducting four. Steve Korn is a piano player extraordinaire. Heavy-duty writer, has been playing around. He's actually, I found out, is recording something with Steve Ali right now and played with the Von Olin Ali Big Band, the Korn Brothers Trio with Joe Deal and his brother, Greg, and just a super musician, like one of these unbelievable hidden treasures in Indianapolis that has played with everybody.
Very cool. That's a great list.
It is a great list, and it's just proud to have those people inducted.
Now, the scholarship program on the other end of that, how does that work? There's some scholarships that you guys give out to young musicians? And
yes.
Are those announced that night? Or
no, we announced...
It's basically raising money for those scholarships, is that...
Well, if people would come, please, to this event, we do use the money for the scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are a tax... free
non-for-profit. Mm-hmm. Right.
Non-for-profit. Couldn't think of the words. No, we have a process now to choose the scholarship winners.
Okay.
They are provided to, the names are given to us by jazz professors. We kind of expanded it a few years ago. Instead of just having the area colleges, we go all over the state.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why in a second, but, so we have a criteria. Josh Weirich is now the education director of the Jazz Foundation and did a lot of hard work this year, but we do have criteria set up. They have to actually write a letter to us, and mm-hmm. some other criteria. They have to have a certain GPA, and the professors have to nominate.
So these are
them.
Students in college right now studying
yes.
jazz. Okay.
Go yes, ahead. But they're not necessarily jazz majors because, for example, the one thing I guess I'm proud of a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. we have a jazz, and this year we have somebody from Purdue University. Purdue doesn't have a jazz major program,
yeah.
but Mo Trout, the jazz professor at Purdue, has like the biggest jazz high school jazz festival in the state. Why should we exclude him? So we don't anymore, and we open that up. So this year we have four scholarships. They get $1,000.
Awesome. Okay.
It's I hope I say these names right. Brandon Douthit from Butler, James Lawfery from University of Indianapolis. This is a tough one. Atishiel Kak from Purdue.
Okay.
And Adam Marchand from Ball State.
Nice.
So we're pretty proud of these guys. And these guys will come and perform with our band that will be there tonight, the Joel Tucker Trio.
Cool. So. Yeah. Okay. So I was going to ask. musicians that are getting scholarships get to come and attend and perform. That's awesome.
It's one of the requirements, by the way.
And you mentioned Joel Tucker Trio. So you've got some of my favorite people performing. Everett yeah. Green's going to be singing.
Everett Green.
Always just an amazing.
Wait a minute. Everett Green. Okay, go ahead.
he's just such a great
guy. He's the best.
And such a great performer. And
yeah.
Joel Tucker, great jazz guitarist and a really fun guy. He's got a great band. And so that's going to be cool hearing
Tucker.
Them play. Yeah.
Yeah. I was, I got to tell you an inside jazz story. Don't tell anybody, okay? Mm-hmm. But it's funny, Joel, I said, hey, Joel, would you guys come and play and be the trio? He said, yeah, that'd be great. So getting in touch, he goes, hey, Gene, do you want to be the drummer with the trio? And I said, I would love to. I can't. I got to do the other
You're
part.
You're a little busy that night.
I'm a little busy, but that was really sweet of them. Good players, though.
That's cool. Yeah, so you mentioned before that, you know, so originally, like, the Jazz Foundation Showcase used to be sort of like a greatest hits,
yeah.
kind of a big party and stuff. But it's nice to have some feature performers. Have it more sort of structured, let's say. You
know? It is more structured. And like I said, it's more about the legacy than just maybe sometime in the future, if somebody wants to put it together, there could be another, you know, have
a crazy party.
Crazy party. Kathy, if you're out there. No, but for this event. Also, by the way, we did move it to November. It did used to be.
It used to be like right up against the holidays.
Yeah, and it was just crazy to pull off. Yeah. So this is the first year of moving it back to like November. And we thought the 20th, since it's our 20th anniversary, would be a good idea.
Nice. That's very cool. Ties in very well together. Gene, before I let you go, in addition to all the great work you're doing with the Indianapolis Jazz Foundation, what other things you got on your horizon, man?
Wow. Well, I'm very lucky to I'm still playing with my group, the Fairleigh Markowitz Jazz Quartet. And then I also have a new 8-piece band with Richard Dole.
Nice.
We're playing some of Phil Allen's arrangements, a gentleman that was from Indianapolis. And then I'm also have the honor, I'm teaching a workshop for the Indiana Music Educators Association in Jasper coming up.
Excellent.
So just doing a lot of stuff. I'm also a proud IPS third grade teacher. And proud
very
of
good.
It, so
very
helping those
good.
Little kids learn to read and write and stuff.
Gene, that's very cool, and always great to hear you out and see you play, and I really appreciate you coming in at Art of the Matter today.
Well, I appreciate what you do for our music in our town. So,
Travis DiNicola with jazz drummer Gene Markowitz. The Indianapolis Jazz Foundation Showcase will take place at the Jewel Center on Thursday, November 20th, starting at 6 p.m., The Jewel Center is located at 3333 North Illinois Street. Again, 3333 North Illinois Street. More information can be found at IndieJazzFoundation.org. IndieJazzFoundation.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Encore, formerly known as Encore Vocal Arts, has undergone a metamorphosis recently. Sharon Gamble invited Artistic Director Gregory Risto and Board Chair Stacy Gentilet in to learn about the changes as well as the ensemble's season opener, Remix.
Well, Gregory, our listeners remember how you got involved with Encore. Stacey, how did you get involved?
Well, a fellow board member had recommended it to me. The one thing I can tell you for sure is that they didn't ask me on the board because of my great singing voice. I couldn't carry a note in a bag. So they brought me on for my marketing savviness and some business stuff more so than the singing end.
And tell me about this process. You've recently been through a strategic planning and rebranding process that sounds like a pretty a big, complicated, a lot of effort, but a lot of intelligence behind this process.
Yeah, I don't know if it was so much complicated as it was necessary.
Okay.
And I think we started a process about 2 years ago. And like I said earlier, it was driven from necessity because we realized that we have to take Encore through a metamorphosis to become more relevant to the arts community. One thing I was just talking with Greg about standing here in a lobby before we came in was 2 years ago when we started this, you know, the first question that we asked was, we said, hey, if we were to walk down the street and, you know, snag somebody by the shoulder and say, hey, you want to come and see a choir? And be like, no, not so much.
You know, and the irony about that is I'm someone who has absolutely lived in the world of choral music for many years.
Right.
And I love going to choir concerts, but I know that that's largely because I'm so inculcated in it that I know what to expect. I'm already familiar with the music. But if I weren't, you go to a typical choir concert and the choir stands still on the risers. There's not much visual interest at all. It's a purely sonic experience, which can be lovely, but we thought there should be more to this.
Yeah, we're living in the world of ADD now, where you know, everyone's checking their iPhone every 5 seconds for a new message or a new text, and you know, same thing with TV. I mean, just watch a TV screen or any movie. I mean, it's literally changing like every second and a half.
And beyond that, it's not just the plot or the acting, but there's the lighting, there's the music. It's this combination of all these different art forms together to make one great product. And so we started looking at how could we do that for choral music? How could we make a choral concert as compelling as a film, as a TV show, as and this is, you know, this is not a new idea even in classical art. You can go back to Wagner saying he wanted the complete artwork. And in a way, this is what we're trying to do now with choral music for today's age, to say, how can we draw in these other elements to make it a real full experience?
And we really came up with three primary building blocks to do that. The first one was emotional. You know, we want every performance to really hit you in the gut with something, whatever that key emotion is, because that's the biggest influencer.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, education. We want people to come and, you know, feed that 6 inches of gray matter between their ears with, hey, you know, that was emotional and I learned something. And then finally, we want it to be multisensory, where it's coming at you from all kinds of different and unpredictable angles, or maybe you're even a part of it.
Hmm.
So really, it's those three building blocks. It's emotainment, edutainment, and multitainment all wrapped into Encore.
Yeah.
So it's maybe a way to get people who didn't even know they're interested in vocal or choral music.
Yeah, and that's really happened with this new show. That
really,
the first
yes.
one on the new season, it's called Remix, and it's think of it as Mozart meets techno.
Yeah,
and Greg and I were just talking about this as well, where people that you would never think would be interested in what we have done over the last 43 years are now all of a sudden opening their eyes and going, I want
to
go to that.
I've got to come to that. Yeah,
yeah.
It's tickets are so easy to sell for this one because, you know, I mean, who's ever heard an electronic dance music concert with live choir. I mean, you
and Joe Melton.
And Joe Melton, DJ
That's
Joe
right.
Meltdown, a wonderful percussionist who's played at Talbot, at the Vogue, and all around the country as well. It's going to be quite something.
How'd you cook up this idea?
Well, you know, I have a love of techno music myself, having grown up in the 90s.
Sure.
And partied a bit.
This is where we insert the boots and pants and boots and pants. And
that's
boots
right.
And
yeah, exactly. not the typical WFYI music, of course, but
we have a very big tent.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And in any case, there's so much that techno music does with rhythm and beat, And sometimes the challenge of programming an interesting choral concert is we have tons and tons of slow, pretty music that may not have a driving beat under it. And I just started thinking, you know, these two could work really well together. And reached out to Andrew Pramick, who's a experimental performance artist and DJ based in Berlin, Germany, actually. He works for Ableton, which is a big DJ software company, and has an undergraduate degree in vocal performance from the Eastman School of Music. So he's someone who is in his life absolutely fusing these two very different worlds, and said, hey, Andrew, do you want to remix the Hallelujah Chorus and some crazy other things for us? And he jumped on board, and then DJ Joe Meltdown jumped on board as well. So it's, yeah.
I think when you're doing things that are as avant-garde as what we're trying to do, it's surprisingly not as challenging to find people that want to throw their hat in a ring with it.
Yeah.
Which has been a great benefit to us. People like the freakiness and the weirdness and, you know, the non-status quo. I think we're just wired that way.
Yeah, yeah. It's a concert. I have told some of my old conducting teachers about this concert, and they sort of looked at me like, really, Greg? You know, they're very, very serious.
Tisk, tisk.
But my friends who are not musicians, and you know, they're all so excited about this, which is just great.
So on the first rehearsal where you told your singers about this, tell me about that.
You know, they mixed reactions.
Sure.
Well,
they had
2 years of advanced warning.
Yeah,
to
I mean,
they've
been a part of this.
And at first, there was some cross looks.
They're absolutely.
One of our singers said, I don't want to be up there slithering around on the stage.
Yeah, and then we made her
Cirque du Soleil.
And then we made her slither on the stage last year. And
but she liked it.
She loved it. Yeah, exactly. It's funny how that works.
That's when we did Timeless Love.
Yeah, it was great. But no, I'll tell you, when we first sang the Josquin Ave Maria, which for choral music fans is one of the classic Renaissance pieces.
Mm-hmm.
When we first put it with the track that Andrew had come up with, it was funny because I'd say, you know, almost everyone in the choir absolutely loved it. But I saw one look from one of our basses at me just like, really, Greg? Really?
Have you lost your mind?
Yeah. But even he's starting to get into it now, too. I mean, it gives it a whole a richness that human voices alone couldn't do. I mean, that's something that I'm interested in as a sort of a technophile.
And again, I think a lot of the core things that we're talking about here in this interview comes back to the first thing that we mentioned was the necessity. You know, I think anytime there's big change, you're automatically going to get some pushback, and you're also going to, you know, get new interest from other people that you never thought you were going to get. But it really is necessary because the arts environment here, even in Indianapolis, is highly competitive.
Of course.
And I think, you know, people are always looking for new stuff. And if you're not part of that new stuff, then you're going to lose your audience. And that's why we've had to go out to the fringe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had to go out, you know, like Chris Anderson's long tail theory they always talk about in business, where you've got to get out on the freaky edge. And that's where all the great things happen.
And I think just also as creative artists, we like to be doing new and different things. I mean, that's a real part of us. And when you take, I mean, choral music is absolutely the oldest form of classical music, going all the way back to the Middle Ages and before.
We're using the original instrument.
Using the original instrument. And so to take the most stodgy of classical music forms and say, you know, what can be new and interesting about that? Just for me, that's a real exciter and just drives me to come up with new and fun ideas.
Yeah, and I would add to that as well that, you know, just because we are adding in a lot of this fringe stuff into the performances, the singing is still at the core. And I'll tell you, from a guy who can't sing, me, our singers are of the highest caliber. I mean, they really are, and we don't just take anybody. So, you know, we've got almost 40 singers now, and they are just all individually incredible performers.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
And, you know, you're talking about how ancient singing is, and percussion is probably the second oldest
instrument, right?
So you're kind of putting them together. So.
Yeah, and in fact, if you go back to the Middle Ages, choral music from the Middle Ages, we suspect that a lot of it would have had improvised percussion with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, really a lot of what we're doing is probably in its own way fairly faithful to the performance practice of older music.
So my perception is one of the outcomes of this is when somebody comes to hear this is, even if they know they've sung Carmina Burana, they've sung mm-hmm. the Hallelujah Chorus, they know how it's supposed to sound,
right?
Just air quotes around that. They're going to come out with a new perspective and a new appreciation because good art will withstand tinkering with, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, with the O Fortuna from Carmina Burana, that piece is almost techno to begin with. It has that bass line, the oompy-doody, oompy-doody, mm-hmm. that repeats over and over. It's very much, it's very much already there. And so it's really interesting to see with some of these pieces. I think the Dies Irae from the Mozart Requiem similarly has that built-in drive, how close they are to what we would think of as a modern techno sound, even though they're hundreds of years old.
So are people going to be moved to stand up and dance?
We sure hope so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about interactive stage.
Yeah, we have far less seating in this venue.
Yeah, let's talk about this venue.
The sanctuary.
Yeah.
What an amazing place.
That's beautiful.
This is a Lutheran church, right?
That's
because,
right.
Because back when it was still a church, I remember going to a Messiah sing-along
there.
In German.
How about that?
Yeah, a million years ago when it was still active as a church. But what's it like now that it's an event space? What's it like inside?
Well, it's very dilapidated, but in a very romanticized kind of way.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure they have weddings and other events in there. And I saw Verge just had an event there as well. So it's a fantastic place. It's got a beautiful upstairs, you know, all brick walls and kind of crackling plastered wooden floors, and they've got a little VIP room that we're actually going to turn into the Sam Ash VIP room because they're a big sponsor for mm-hmm. us.
They're doing all our lights. It's going to be a big, I mean, it's really going to be a laser techno light spectacular.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, exactly.
So if this goes the way it sounds like it's going to go, mm-hmm. you're not going to do this treatment to every concert.
No, absolutely.
But you're still going to mix things up, maybe even more than you've been evolving.
That's
to.
Right. And as Stacey said, with all of our shows, we're coming back to that idea of educational, emotional, and multi-tainment.
And it really is a complete experience. You know, I think in the past, every time I go and see something, it seems like you show up like 5 minutes before the event, whether it's a symphony or another musical thing, mm-hmm. you watch the event and then you leave 5 minutes after it's over.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is we really want to slow that process down and kind of extend it so that there's a pre-show, a pre-show, an actual show that's got the three building blocks in it, and then a post-show and a post-post-show so that it's expanding and stretching out that experience. Because I think at the heart of it, coming back to emotion and experiences, that's what people are really drawn to. I think in the technology world that we're living in today with iPhones and computers and iPads and, you know, Twitter and everything that's really micro, people are looking more and more to connect, not only with each other, but perhaps new people, and with the entertainers as well. So we really want to have an all-encompassing, stretched out and elongated type of event that people really appreciate.
Mm-hmm. And so and if you look then at the rest of our season, for instance, in February we're doing a show that we're calling Masquerade. And the music for that is the Mozart Requiem, but it's not the Mozart Requiem that everyone knows and loves because, of course, Mozart died when writing it. And
right.
typically, the version that's performed is the one that his student, Franz Zusmeier, completed.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been other completions where people have tried to complete it in the style of Mozart.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, we're doing a brand new, not completion, but continuation, written by Greg Spears, a composer down in Florida, where he takes the approach of, what if Mozart were alive today? What would his style have been like?
Ooh.
And so where the Mozart music stops, it gradually morphs into this wonderful, tone clustery, Whitaker-esque language that's just gorgeous. And we're pairing that with dancers and with pastors from a variety of traditions, exploring the idea of the Requiem text, of course, traces the soul's journey after death, exploring that. And we're presenting it all as a great big masquerade ball right around Mardi Gras. It becomes a whole
heaven, hell,
event,
purgatory.
Heaven, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Costumes like potentially half the choir dressed up in heaven garb and half dressed in Satan garb. And mm-hmm. then everyone, you know, in the audience is supposed to come in costume and masquerade as well. And there's going to be candles all lit
candles
everywhere.
Yeah, it's going to be quite awesome. And then in May, we're doing a performance we're calling Imagine, the Life and Times of John Lennon. And that, of course, as you might expect, is going to be pretty much music of John Lennon and the Beatles. And we're doing it as a dramatic production as well, with Rob Johansson, who will be familiar to many Indianapolis audiences from his work at the IRT, as John Lennon. We're having the wig created for him, and that should be pretty wonderful as well.
And lots of lava lamps.
And lots of lava lamps.
Sharon Gamble with Encore's Artistic Director Gregory Risto and Board Chair Stacy Gentile. Learn more at EncoreVocalArts.org. That's EncoreVocalArts.org. And you can hear Remix this Saturday, November 15th at 8 p.m. at The Sanctuary at 701 North Pennsylvania Street.
Hey, Travis.
Yeah, Sharon.
Not yet.
No,
it's a couple of weeks away, but
you got to practice your gobble.
You know you're going to eat too much on Thanksgiving Day and that weekend. So we have lots of things you can run around and do to pre-burn calories.
Oh, there we go.
On that calendar we call What Do We Do? What do you have?
Well, you know what? I got something great going on this weekend at the Jazz Kitchen on Sunday the 16th. Two shows, 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. Jason Marsalis. You may recognize that name.
Oh, my God. My favorite
or
cartoon,
at least the last
Daddy
name.
Daddy, they've discovered another Marsalis.
Well, they did. So this is the youngest of the Marsalis family, and he's a vibraphone player, and he is going to be performing with the 21st Century Trad Band at the Jazz Kitchen on Sunday night, 7 o'clock, 9 o'clock. Jason Marsalis. Should be a lot of fun at Jazz Kitchen.
And for people who don't speak jazz, trad is traditional.
There you go.
Hey, you might have recently been listening to Sound Medicine and heard the three speakers who are part of the Spirit in Place annual public conversation talking about health aspects of their topic journey. But I just want to remind you that that public conversation is coming up on Sunday the 16th from 4 to 5:30 at CTS in the Shelton Auditorium. It's free. Gail Sheehy, Timothy Quill, and Mark Nepo, all fascinating alone, but they're going to be dynamite together. So if you get to nothing else in Spirit in Place, by the way, I encourage you to go to lots more Spirit in Place, but make sure you get that closing conversation, public conversation, Journey's End, on your calendar.
Very good. Hey, don't be a Scrooge. No.
Bah, humbug.
It's coming up, Christmas Carol at the IRT, and a great way to kick it off is the Scrooge Gives Back event. They've done this before at the IRT. They're having a special day working with their partners Indiana Blood Center and Second Helpings and Toys for Tots. And if you go to the IRT on November 14th, that's a Friday between 3 and 7 p.m., you can donate blood, you can donate a toy, you can donate food, you can donate spices and rice or pasta, whatever you want to donate to give back. And then as a thank you for that, they're going to be doing backstage tours of A Christmas Carol, and you also get one free ticket to go see A Christmas Carol.
Wow.
Which is a pretty cool thing. They have a limited number of different performances the tickets are available for, but there's still plenty of them. So again, you go to the IRT next Friday between 3 and 7, you take either food or your blood or pasta or whatever you want, and you give back.
Well, I would hope you take your blood whether you're going to give some
go.
Or not, but
you can get more information at IRTLive.org.
So see, we do have some Thanksgiving-themed things, including a very indie Thanksgiving. Mark your calendars for this coming Tuesday, which is November 18th from 5:30 to 7. Representatives from Food for Thought and Indiana Harvest, Goose, that's a book, by the way, Goose the Market, and Homespun will gather at Indie Reads Books to talk everything from tablescaping to turkey prep. Get some pro tips to help you ease into the holidays. That was a pro tip. Refreshments will be served, of course, and that's free, and that's at Indie Reads Books on the far end of Mass Ave.
Well, Sharon, there's a lot to try to stuff into this calendar.
I get it.
Yes, but we don't have that much more time. So if you want to learn more about local arts events, then you can go to indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website. And we will be back next week with more to stuff your calendar with on that calendar we call
What Will We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Each year, the Indianapolis City Ballet brings some of the brightest stars of ballet from around the world to Indianapolis for a one-night gala called Evening with the Stars. Travis DiNicola spoke with the ballet's executive director, Kevin Hess, and the performance and masterclass director, Jolinda Menendez, about this year's show.
Jolinda, Kevin, welcome to Art of the Matter. It's great to see you both.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. Kevin, you know that I love this event every year. And I always look forward to having you come in so we can chat about it. This year, Evening with the Stars, the ballet performance from Indianapolis City Ballet, is a little bit later and in a different location this year. Tell me a bit about that, because usually it's been in the past at Marat and that, second weekend of September or something.
It has. We've typically been the weekend after Labor Day. And we were curious, as were our fans, I think, to try Clues Hall. And, you know, part of our long-term plan is mm-hmm. to, as we build toward building a company and doing that, is to present and to bring major companies in. And there are two main halls, and that's the Murat and Clues. So we wanted to get our feet wet at Clues and see how that works for us
and
see how it works for our audience. Yeah.
And there's it's a slightly bigger stage at Clues, is that
right? It's a bigger stage and a smaller audience.
Yeah, okay.
Slightly smaller audience, mm-hmm. yeah.
Interesting. So, the date change, just that's what sort of worked out as availability?
There was actually an available date then, mm-hmm. the third week of November, which we've now booked for now in the foreseeable future. So
excellent.
We're looking forward to a long-term relationship there with Clues Hall at Butler University.
Very good. Now, you mentioned, the other plans. I mean, of course, the Indianapolis City Ballet does more than just this one event each year. And I know you've been doing lots of different classes, mm-hmm. and now you've got a competition coming up next summer. We'll talk about it in a few minutes. Give me a little bit of sort of background on what the mission and spirit of the City Ballet is.
Our job is to bring great ballet to Indianapolis in whatever form that means. And our masterclass program, sponsored by Jock and Penny Fortune, has been a tremendous success here, working with all the schools in the area, having students come in from
Cincinnati,
far away, from
Chicago,
mm-hmm.
Everywhere. They literally drive 4 and 5 hours here to get to a 90-minute masterclass with some of the great teachers of the great conservatories and such. As we build, we're trying to build more.
Mm-hmm.
The more we can give, and we're really dictated by the market. I mean, as many people as want ballet, we're going to provide more.
Mm-hmm.
So this event is our signature event. It's where
yes,
we started. I mean, we bring in stars from all around the world and put on a night that celebrates both classical and contemporary. But we have much deeper ambitions than that. And so part of that is expanding into a competition, ultimately into a choreographic workshop, and hopefully someday into a company.
That'd be excellent. Jolinda, you've been involved with the Indianapolis City Ballet now since, I think, 2009. Mm-hmm. Also head up the masterclass program. Tell me a bit more about your involvement with the ballet.
You mean my background or with Indianapolis City Ballet?
Yeah, sure, because you've been involved in directing, is that right, with the Evening with the Stars as well?
Yes.
So tell me a bit about your involvement with that.
Well, I'm the director of the Evening with the Stars, and I also direct the Masterclass series,
mm-hmm.
and also will direct the Indianapolis City Ballet International Competition this coming year. And it's been very exciting because it's been growing,
mm-hmm.
and people are finding out more and more about us, and the students are coming from far away to these master classes and getting a great deal from it. We've introduced them to many school directors and made that connection for them, so they are able to look beyond for the future, mm-hmm. towards the future.
If I might, Jolinda is being very modest. She was a dancer with American Ballet Theater.
Yes.
Principal dancer with Bavarian National Ballet. She's been a teacher for 20 years, working at New York University, She's got a tremendous background in dance. We're very lucky to have her with this program.
Absolutely.
She's in charge of selecting the artists and putting a program together that everybody has, not everybody, 2,000 people each year have raved about.
So exactly.
We're very pleased.
Well, we try and give a very diversified evening, so it's a little bit for everybody. We do the neoclassical, we do the pure classical, and we do the contemporary, and I think it's a very interesting and full evening, and I can't complain. I'm always excited. And
well, I am too.
And we've gotten wonderful feedback, so it's, yeah.
You know, every year I tell people who haven't been that they should really go, and people are like, oh, you know, I'm not sure if I like ballet. I'm like, mm-hmm. well, then this is perfect for you because, I mean, this is such an amazing sampler each year. As you said, different styles. You have, you know, incredible, some of the best ballet dancers from all over the world. An opportunity like that to see them all on one stage in one night doesn't exist really anywhere else. But the variety that you have, you know, each year, you know, there may be, you know, a duet, and if you like it, that's great. If not, it's 5 minutes and you're on to another piece that's,
right,
you know, maybe
absolutely.
Completely different and challenging in different ways, but
right.
always well executed. What can you tell me about what people will see this year? How did you put this year's program together?
Well, we start quite far back, and we try and bring dancers from all over.
Mm-hmm.
And usually we end up bringing some of them back a few times, some of the dancers back a few times, because the audiences like them. And it's always nice to see a dancer a few times in different roles and different pieces. And so there are those general times. Then we try and introduce new dancers into the evening. Last year we had Melissa Hamilton and
Eric
Underwood from the Royal Ballet.
And they're coming back this year.
They're coming back this year because they were a big hit last year.
Mm-hmm.
And the dancers are always so happy to come back because the audiences here are so warm.
Mm-hmm.
They're so generous, and they feel, and the dancers feel appreciated. And are excited always to come back. They love coming back.
You know, I have to say, I've been fortunate enough to meet a couple of the dancers, usually like right after the program is over that night, and they are so happy. They're delighted with, it seems, not just, you know, with the response they got from the audiences here, but they're so delighted to see each other perform. I mean, for many of them, it's maybe the one chance of the year that they can see dancers from other companies.
Exactly.
And
some of them know each other from, you know, other experiences, other galas, and so it's a great reunion for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And this year especially, it's going to be a new experience because we're moving into Clues Hall, and we hope to bring a new energy into this evening, full of surprises.
I notice you have a lot of dancers this year who have been affiliated with American Ballet Theater.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was also where you danced as well, right?
Yes, correct.
So not a coincidence.
No.
Well, it is sort of. I mean, American Ballet Theater is the company of stars.
Yes.
I mean, even internationally.
That's right.
I mean, they hire stars. They have a court of ballet, and they bring in the stars to do the principal roles. It's much like the Metropolitan Opera.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a logical drawing point for us. And we spend the whole year looking at companies and dancers and what we can put on.
But you also have a lot of dancers from overseas as well.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
From Berlin. And where else did we? We were supposed to have a wonderful dancer from the Bolshoi, but because of a knee injury, that didn't happen. But we're hoping to bring her back. Actually, she's put it in her calendar for next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't give out the name because I want it to be a surprise for next year. So stay tuned.
One of the main changes we made this year is to bring an ensemble piece.
Mm-hmm.
And it's down at the bottom of our poster and such. It's called the San Francisco Ballet School Trainee Program. And these
tell me a bit about that, because I was curious about that when I saw
that.
These
are 18 to 20-year-olds, and we were, you know, having a stage that's 50 feet wide in a house that's that big, that far back. I mean, the first balcony is literally 200 feet back.
Right.
We really wanted to show people what it looks to fill the stage.
Okay.
So this is 12 dancers, and it's a piece we saw. Why don't you tell them a little bit?
That sounds fun.
It's a piece we saw in Toronto, Canada, at the National Ballet of Canada School. It's called the AI Assemblée. Internacional. Mm-hmm. And it was done by the choreographer.
Miles Thatcher is a 24-year-old corps de ballet dancer with San Francisco Ballet.
Right.
And he just tried something once, and everybody went, oh, my God, this guy knows what he's doing. And he's becoming one of the most accomplished choreographers, upcoming choreographers
That's
now.
That's exciting.
And he created this on these younger dancers. And They're the pre-professionals. They'll be professional dancers somewhere next year in various companies around the
world.
Sure,
so this is a great opportunity to both
really
see
is.
Them and see a new piece of choreography,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, right. Very cool. Contemporary ballet.
Very.
Okay. What other highlights are there this year that you want to make sure that people know about who are thinking about attending?
There's a new solo by Jana Selenko from Berlin that was commissioned just for this particular evening. And then, of course, there's the piece that was created on Alessandra Ferri, who's made a comeback from her career. She stopped dancing about 6-7 years ago and then started back. And we decided to, well, this went further back because Herman Cornejo had been on our gala previously. And I had asked him, is there any choreographer that you would like to work with in the future? And he said, yes, I would love to work with Demis Volpi. And we said, great, we adore Demis Volpi also, and let's make it happen.
He did the Elvis Presley piece we had
the
on our program
that you
2 years
saw.
Ago.
Excellent.
Little Monsters, it was called.
Yeah.
And so we got in touch with Demis, and Demis was honored. And Alessandra, Herman called and said, can we have Alessandra in the piece? And I said, fabulous, let's do this. So that's how it all got started. And we
having her is a pretty big deal.
Yes. And she's still looking fabulous at the age of 51.
You can see her on the cover of this month's Dance Magazine, and she talks about the Evening with the Stars, which
is
very,
very
nice.
Cool.
Right.
That's awesome. Well, it sounds like, once again, a terrific evening. I mean, so much great dance in one night. I do want to talk briefly before we wrap this up about the program you have going on next summer, the competition.
Yes, the international
tell me a bit
competition.
About that, yeah.
Well, we wanted there are so many competitions that have been successful within the last 15 years, but we felt we wanted to do something different, more that catered more to the education and the whole complete dancer, the student, and therefore we wanted to do something that not just displayed the dancer on stage, but to also look at them in classroom work, in technique, and their basic foundation of their technique. And so that's where the premise started for this competition. They will also have every day a class in the morning with coaches that we've gathered, big names. We have Angel Corella. We have now Daniel Ulbricht from New York City Ballet, and we have Greta Hodgkinson from National Ballet of Canada.
Everyone's favorite, Yuan Tan.
Yes, YY. We call her YY. And we have Monique Ludier, who used to be a very big ballerina in the Paris Opera. And we have Susan Jaffe, who's now Dean of the North Carolina School of the Arts.
Yeah.
So they will be taking class with all these wonderful people, artists, and we'll have a meet and greet Q&A with the artists and the competitors.
Yeah, how many competitors will be limited?
About 180 will be picked.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want to go too big to start with. And then we also have one-on-one coaching before they even get to put one foot on stage.
Hmm.
So before they come out to do their first classical variation, they will have that one-on-one with a coach.
It sounds like
on
an
the
excellent
variation.
Program.
Yes.
We're trying to reinvent the competition and make it a valuable experience for
a
every
true
competitor.
Learning experience for
So we limit it to 180. You have to pre-qualify.
Yes.
And that has to be done by January the 23rd. So it's open qualification now on our website.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's for students from around the world. So we're excited to bring in really great talent. And it's a recruiting ground for the major ballet conservatories around the world. So they're coming in with scholarships and such to offer to the participants.
It's a very unique experience for a young person.
Yeah.
And we hope it'll grow from there. We're excited about it.
Well, Kevin and Jolinda, let me just say thank you again for the work that you do in bringing such phenomenal teachers and dancers here to Indianapolis. I mean, doing so much for the ballet community here in central Indiana. I know I'm greatly looking forward to Evening with the Stars again, but I know many dancers really benefit from the work that the two of you do. So thank you.
Thank you, Travis.
We're so grateful for the light you shine on the arts at Art of the Matter. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Great to see you both.
Bye-bye.
Travis DiNicola with the Indianapolis City Ballet's Executive Director, Kevin Hess, and their Performance and Masterclass Director, Jolinda Menendez. This year's Evening with the Stars takes place at Clues Memorial Hall on Saturday, November 22nd at 7:30. More information can be found at IndianapolisCityBallet.org, IndianapolisCityBallet.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owls Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll find out what it takes to flip the switch on the Circle of Light celebration.
I bet IPL's involved. I'll get a preview of A White Christmas at Footlight.
And I'll chat with a local actor who is in the touring production of Elf the Musical. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.